Hey, Holly popping in here. Have you registered for Create yet? It's our live event where you can rub elbows with other restaurant professionals and learn from some of your peers, no matter if you have 10 units or 10,000. For loyal listeners of this podcast who are restaurant operators, we're excited to announce that you can register for free. That's right, free. That's a $550 value at no charge for you. Just go to create.nrn.com and use the promo code EXTRASERVING, one word, at checkout. Hi, and welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about another week of earnings paloozas and our big takeaways, plus Chipotle's latest legal battle. Later on, you'll hear from Matt Harding of Piatta Italian Street Food. On Takeaway with Sam Okus, Sam spoke with Otto Othman, CEO of Pincho, about what it's like to be an emerging brand operator, and they give you an exclusive Create promo. And NRN has a brand new podcast, First Bite, the new daily morning podcast from NRN. Every day we'll be covering the day's top headlines, as well as providing a deeper dive into one of the stories with an NRN editor. And now it's time to introduce my two co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, Editor-in-Chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I'm Leanne Zinsmeister, Managing Editor of Nation's Restaurant News. And I'm back.
Welcome back. Our audience sighs
it's
with
been
relief.
Been a while.
Yes, it
has. Don't worry, I'm back. I'll keep them in check this week.
We won't talk about our favorite animated movies and our, I don't know, food and what have you. Although when you said earnings palooza, Holly, I did wonder, we never got to the bottom of where that phrase palooza comes from. Yeah. Leanne, do you know where palooza comes from? What's the root of palooza? Hold on. I'm going to Google it.
I couldn't hold off not saying palooza again. It was in my notes from last week. And then I couldn't hold off not say, like, I need to say the word palooza. I just love it so much.
I'm not finding any easy
when earnings
examples.
Season is over.
I cry, I guess.
Okay. I can confirm. I just a quick look at Google. I can confirm that this comes from Lollapalooza originally, but
wow.
I don't know if there's any other Lollapalooza might just be a made up word. So who knows?
Wow. You learned so much.
Mm-hmm. That's what this podcast is for.
Learning.
We are imparting value to our audience by telling them that the first palooza was, in fact, Lollapalooza.
The Lolla.
Of the Lolla variety.
Sure.
All right. Okay. Let's get into news. I got this. Let's go right into news.
Oh, okay. And then Leanne and I can go if you've got this.
I did write most of the stories this week that we're talking about. So I feel like.
No big deal. All right.
All right. So it's another week of earnings. I think two of the biggest stories to come out of this earnings week were from Wendy's and Sweetgreen. So Sweetgreen cut 5% of its corporate staff. It made its stock plummet 20%. And then Wendy's is like slowing down its partnership with Reef. It was supposed to have 700 units with Reef by 2025. It's now going to have 125 units by 2025, mostly out in the UK and Canada. So it's really limiting its partnership based on the new way that Reef is handling things post some investigations that have been done into Reef. So what do you guys think about the earnings palooza from Lolla? What do you guys think about what's been happening this week?
If only there was a strong Lollapalooza food story to be able to make that segue work. But
Leanne,
you know,
didn't you go to Lollapalooza one year?
No, I went to Governor's Ball.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Sam, to cut you off.
So different. I went to Lollapalooza. You didn't bother to ask me if I've ever been to Lollapalooza. But
I
know
think
what?
You're cool enough.
Of the three of us, who is the musician? Who's the one that's most into music? That's me. So yeah, I'm pretty cool. And by the way, the Lollapalooza I went to, tangent, was headlined by two bands on my bucket list at the time, which were Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine. And I saw both of them in one weekend. So this was many years ago. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk about Wendy's. Let's start with Wendy's, because I think one of the most interesting things about this Reef news is how quickly this happened. I mean, this was only, I guess it wasn't the last quarterly earnings. Maybe it was two quarters ago that they announced their Reef partnership and we're going to go huge with 750 locations. And it was going to be this big, big deal. And already so quickly it's been scaled back. And, you know, I think what's interesting as part of Ron's story, you know, it just really feels to me like Wendy's put the onus on Reef, that it was because of many ways in which Reef has scaled back. But I mean, I have just have to imagine, too, that maybe it just wasn't working like they wanted it to. I mean, Wendy's might not be happy with that operation where they're running out of a Reef kitchen. I, you know, when they announced it, to me, it just felt like, okay, on one hand, you get access to real estate, neighborhoods, communities that maybe you didn't have access to before. You can get more into inner cities, urban areas. But on the other hand, I'm also like, is that really Wendy's? Is that like what Wendy's needs to be doing? And so I find it, I guess I'm not surprised by this, but I am surprised how quickly they are pulling back on that strategy.
Yeah, part of it might also be recession related. I think we might see restaurants slowing growth, not specifically with Reef, but across the board over the coming months. Of course, that ties into this Sweet Green story too. But I think there are probably a lot of factors at play. It's actually been a full year since Wendy's announced its Reef partnership.
Goodness so gracious.
Still wow. Pretty fast, but it was last August.
Oh my gosh, that they what is said time?
700. Time is so weird. Yeah, time flies.
Whew.
Well, so something Ron told me in this morning's episode of First Bite. So go and listen to First Bite this morning if you haven't, and you'd like to hear more on the Wendy's deal, their whole earnings. We talked about the whole thing from beginning to end, including their breakfast saga. But one thing that he said is that it's because Reef is now changing the way that they use their kitchen. So they're not doing just one restaurant in any of them anymore. They're doing multiple restaurants, and Wendy's doesn't like that. Wendy's wants it to just be a Wendy's in the Reef kitchens. And he said that that's really one of the reasons why Wendy's was saying that they no longer wish to continue this partnership, but that they are going to expand in the UK a lot more and Canada, and that's through this Reef partnership. And then they're going to expand their brick and mortar footprint a lot in Spain. So they're focusing a lot more on international deals rather than focusing domestic on growth.
I mean, that Reef thing is so funny because I thought that was sort of the idea of Reef, was that they ran multiple brands out of one unit. So of course, that's Reef's strategy, but maybe, you know, of course, I'm not in the room where Reef and Wendy's were coming to some agreement. So I don't know what Reef promised them, but I think the whole idea of a ghost kitchen is the efficiency of it is that you can run multiple brands out of one kitchen or at least one space. And so, of course, Reef's going to want to pursue that because that's a better business model for them than to simply be Wendy's rents our facility and calls it a restaurant. And so, but I mean, simultaneously, Reef creates these, you know, pods essentially, right? And why not create one exclusively for Wendy's and it's next door to one that's running five other brands? I mean, so I don't know. Of course, like I said, I'm not there for those meetings, but yeah, clearly there was some disagreement, business disagreement there. But I have to say, for Reef, it does make more sense for them to run multiple brands out of their facilities because it's just good business sense.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about Sweet Green, who was doing great for a while, but now has seen, you know, some pretty big cuts in terms of corporate staff. They're also downsizing their head office. Their stock plummeted. They've seen some repercussions from what's happening. I mean, they said that in their earnings call, they said that their sales had increases of same store sales of 20% in April and May. And then in June and July, they had 7% same store sales increases, which is huge. And they said they have never seen anything like that before. So, I mean, we're talking massive, massive differences in just the span of 2 months, and they're blaming it on travel. They're blaming it on COVID. I mean, what do you guys think in terms of the fact that we're seeing such slowdown over the summer?
I find the Sweet Green story so fascinating because they still reported same store sales increases of 16% for the quarter. And so when you say, oh, they're like, sure, their growth has slowed, but they're still seeing increases year over year. So maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they see something coming that we don't. But I feel like every quote that they gave was so negative, when really I don't think the news is that bad overall. And of course, it's rough to have to lay off people. You know, 5% is a sizable chunk of its corporate workforce. And so I understand that. Again, I think it's probably largely recession related. But the whole thing feels, it doesn't feel as dire to me as it seems to feel to the company itself. And as someone who in the last 3 weeks has both traveled and had COVID, surely those two things are unrelated. I don't see how that is, could be to blame for such a large slowdown in restaurant growth, but.
Yeah, it's, I mean, 16%, I think we're seeing broadly across the board that there are results that otherwise would seem positive, like a 16% same store sales increase, that in these times are less so just because of the sheer cost increases, inflation. But what's so interesting about them cutting corporate staff is there have been headlines everywhere of how much the tech sector has been doing this. And I didn't laugh because I don't want to laugh at people losing their job, but I had to almost sort of like smirk because Sweetgreen has always been kind of called this tech company, right? Like, it's almost like it feels like they're almost like tech first, restaurant second. And it's not a knock against them. I think they're incredible innovators. I think they've helped to really lead the way for restaurant tech innovation. But it's really interesting to watch their trajectory because so much of what they are has been parallel to a tech company more so than a restaurant company. And I think a lot of people who are smarter than me have commented on this, which is like their valuation when, you know, they just before they went public and then when they went public, I mean, their valuation was totally disproportional to what it would have been normally for a normal restaurant company of their size. Like their valuation was greater than Wendy's at one point, I remember. And, you know, so much of this valuation came from a lot of that technology, that investment in technology, in that they were these innovators. They were this great story. They were really this brand of the millennials and all of that. So again, not a funny thing, but just sort of a interesting coincidence that the tech sector is laying off thousands of employees, and here so does Sweetgreen. So I can't make assumptions about why that is, but, you know, one has to imagine that, you know, in the pandemic, the story for a lot of tech companies is that in the pandemic, they staffed up because technology became critical in the first year, certainly, of the pandemic. All of these websites and services and apps and what have yous sprung up that, you know, we'd never been Zooming as much as, you know, suddenly everybody was Zooming Zoom, just like, I mean, at one point Zoom was like the most valuable company in the world or something like that, or more so than like ExxonMobil. I'm throwing out random factoids that are probably not real, but like somebody will fact check me, I'm sure. But like the point being is that tech companies in the early days of the pandemic, I mean, just like totally took off, staffed up. And now what we're seeing is this reduction and this coming back to earth. And Sweetgreen certainly did not take off in the first year of the pandemic. As we all know, they suffered, you know, as much as a lot of other restaurant companies because of certainly where their real estate was. But I do still think like what the tech companies are doing is trimming the fat. They're getting back to basics. I just have to wonder if Sweetgreen is doing the same, but I don't know. I mean, I can't make any guesses because I don't have any insight into what all that's about. But at the end of the day, the cost increases, inflation, all of the macroeconomic factors that are affecting restaurant companies are forcing restaurants to get back to basics, trim the fat, you know, make sure that they're tightening the belt. Everybody is preparing for a recession. Although most of what I'm reading now and what most of my sense of things right now is that, you know, it doesn't look like we're in a recession yet. Some people think so. It doesn't look like we're in a recession yet. It might be still around the corner. But anyway, all to say, you see very plainly now that sales is not the only thing that's going to drive the success of your company, right? It's how you manage, you know, G&E, and it's how you manage all sorts of these other things. And sometimes, unfortunately, that results in something like corporate layoffs.
You said trim the fat so many times that now I want a steak.
I think I said it maybe twice. Apparently, it doesn't take much to get you to crave steak. So, interesting lesson.
Sweet Green will podcast. Be so disappointed that this story about them has led you to crave a steak.
Touche. Like, that's literally the opposite of what they want for this world.
We've been talking about salads for so long that I now want a steak.
Guys, we didn't even talk about the fact that I just got back from Big Chicken, my first Big Chicken experience. And I am full of chicken. I'm like
the so opposite of salad. Yes.
Full of chicken. Yeah. You just mentioned salad. They have salads on their menu. But
we were going to talk about that in the happy segment, Sam. That was going to be the happy segment.
I'm saving it. Then I'll save the rest. I'll save it.
That's going to be the happy news.
Happy news. Got it.
It's just a teaser for the end of this.
Yeah. Now we need to talk about sad news for Chipotle, but good news for workers, I guess. Leanne gave me a thumbs up, listeners, to that segue. So I just need everybody to know that. So
then you ruined it. But okay.
No, I needed everybody to know that I got a thumbs up. I needed everybody to know that. It was really important to me. Mm-hmm. So Chipotle and New York City Mayor Eric Adams settled for $20 million over labor disputes with New York City Chipotle workers. So basically, Chipotle was accused of not giving workers enough time to schedule. Like, they weren't giving them enough days ahead of, they weren't giving them schedule enough days ahead of time. They weren't giving them enough vacation days. They weren't giving enough sick days. A lot of labor violations. And so the New York City found them guilty and they settled for $20 million. So they're going to distribute it to all these workers, 13,000 of them. I mean, what do you guys think about the settlement? New York City said it was the largest settlement in New York City history for something of this kind.
Well, I mean, well, this feels like a very New York story, right? I mean, you know, New York is a very difficult regulatory environment for a lot of companies. Not saying right or wrong, just saying, you know, New York presents its own regulatory thing. California, of course, as we all know, has its own regulatory thing. And so, I mean, to me, this feels like a story of a company that is navigating those regulatory conditions probably kind of poorly, although ironic that, you know, they are also based in California. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's a win for the workforce. It's a win for workers. And it's hopefully a warning sign to other companies to be cautious of things like this. But does it project to the rest of the country? Not necessarily, because of, again, sort of the just regulatory environment that you have there in New York. But you know, a company like Chipotle, I don't know, 20 million is not chump change, but, you know, sometimes these things almost come across as like a slap in the wrist to some degree. But yeah, I mean, I think it's also probably, you know, Chipotle is on the brink of entering its own kind of unionization phase, right? I mean, they had one restaurant that unionized. And so it's maybe more of signs of this tenuous relationship between Chipotle and its workforce, but it is very much isolated to New York, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'd like to hope that it portends great things for workers everywhere, all restaurant workers, but I agree with Sam. It's a very New York story. I mean, living here in New York City, there are like Subway ads and stuff everywhere that say, like, you know, that like spell out what these laws are, so that if you work in a restaurant, you see those ads and you know what numbers to call if your employer is breaking those rules. And so it's a very liberal ruling for a very liberal city, and I am all for it, but I don't think it necessarily means anything for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, I just think that it's an interesting ruling to see in light of the unionization movement, especially at Chipotle, that a city is actually taking up the charge versus the restaurant workers having to take up the charge and unionize themselves. Because we've been seeing sparks of unionization at the New York City Chipotles for quite a while. We've been getting emails, at least on our end, from workers, from people, from labor movements in New York City that have been saying Chipotle is planning to unionize here. Chipotle is planning to unionize here. There's a lot of talk about it because of all these issues that workers have been having. So it seems like instead of unionizing, they went to the city and they won. And this may have turned out better for them in the end than actually unionizing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it could be just added sort of kerosene to a future fire in some regards. You know, my hope is that these companies learn their lessons with things like this. And again, a lot of companies, and especially Chipotle right now, are going to be navigating situations like this very cautiously because nobody wants to fall into a situation like Starbucks is in right now with the unionization. But again, it's also, I wouldn't surprise me one bit if New York Chipotle's do unionize, but again, it's not some sign that all the Chipotle's are going to unionize. They're going to have a much tougher, you know, a harder road to hoe, so to speak, in a lot of other parts of the country.
Okay, well, now it's time for happy news, happy news, happy news.
Wow. Do we have a jingle?
I just made up a jingle. I figured we could have a jingle.
I take it back. I'm not the only musician on this podcast right now.
I think maybe you are still.
Did you not hear him hum the other week? Oh, no, you weren't hum. On the call. Brett was on the call. He was humming a song that he thought we'd get sued for, and it was so bad, I don't think they would ever sue us.
It's true. They would never recognize it. So we were in the clear.
So yes, Sam, tell us about your happy news.
Oh, well, my happy news is that I just went to Big Chicken for the first time. Shout out to Josh Halpern and Sam Stanovich. They were in town. Their first franchise location opened here in Ohio. So I was there. And, you know, look, every bit as good as advertised. I had a hot chicken sandwich. I also tried their grilled cheese with chicken, their fries, just really darn good food. And so, yeah, recommend if you're around a Big Chicken, but also Josh is going to be a speaker at Create. So come to Create and hear him speak. I'll be talking with him from the stage about all kinds of things, what it's like to have Shaquille O'Neal as your boss. But he has a really unique perspective too on just working with members of all generations. I won't spoil it because I think he's got a really good way to frame it that you'll have to come to Create and hear about. But just the fact that, you know, he talks about how you've got boomers and management and you've got Gen X, you know, also, you know, kind of at the franchise level, you've got millennials working in this restaurants, you got Gen Z's working the, you know, frontline, you got Gen Alpha's coming in as customers. And just what do you do with all of that? I mean, because it's meeting many different ages of people in many different ways. And it's just really fascinating. But we'll get into that when he speaks at Create. So go register for Create and you can hear more about that.
Yes, you probably will have heard my voice already say, please register for Create. So please register for Create.
But we'd we'll reiterate there. Here. Yes, use the code Extra Serving and you get to come for free.
We'll be doing podcasts there. So you can watch us do podcasts live and in person. The podcast will not be live themselves. They'll be recorded, but you can watch us do podcasts. So that'll be fun. So this week's guest is Matt Harding of Piata. But before I throw it over to Matt, I'm going to throw it over to Vitamix for a really important announcement. Now we have a short ad break with Vitamix featuring corporate executive chef Matt Dugan. We'll be right back to the show.
So Matt Dugan, welcome to the show. Let's start off by talking about something top of mind for the industry right now, labor. Given the industry knowledge that you have and the restaurant operators you work closely with, how is the current labor situation impacting operations, particularly when it comes to beverage programs?
Yeah, Holly, you know, first and foremost, thanks for having me on the podcast. But, you know, I think we would be reluctant to say that we haven't either seen or experienced some sort of labor shortage or issue within the industry itself from, you know, a mixture of what's going on. It's affecting every facet, and you really don't see it until it affects the final product that gets to your hands. So, you know, us at Vitamix, we're trying to create, you know, not only blending equipment, but blending solutions that can help in that facet.
Well, and I would assume that you have a large number of orders. Can you tell me a little bit about how that's impacting everything?
Yeah, you know, the ability for a company to make money and for a restaurant to make money means, you know, they've got to put people through through the drive-through line, through the service lines. And with that, it all comes down to really speed of service. And that's really where Vitamix prides itself on the equipment that it provides, especially with in the blended beverage category and in the quiet one. You know, we offer a machine with, you know, 34 pre-programmed settings. So, you know, whether or not you're a traditional small mom and pop shop or a larger coffee chain or something in between, we've got really one button touch operation that will allow you that speed of service. And if we can help speed that service up, we know that that helps, you know, those returns to the bottom line and get more customers through with the consistency and the quality that we expect out of the final blended product coming out of a Vitamix.
You mentioned the quiet one. What's unique about that blender and what impact does it have on operations and speed of service?
Yeah, so the quiet one really is a front of house machine. It's a monster where we know that you know, you could be dealing with lots of people coming into your organization in open air facilities, and it can be pretty chaotic at times. So what we tried to do was design a blender that could give you a Vitamix quality blend, but in the open airness of a front of house area. And with that, you know, we created a machine that, you know, like I said before, has 34 pre-programmed settings. So it's one button touch operation, but it's got a 48 ounce container that fits on side, and then a closure that allows you to blend in an open air atmosphere. So the ability for me to be taking orders while an order is being completed allows, again, for that speed of service and allows us really to hit home with the customers that we deal with.
Now tell me about the name. I need to hear a little bit about the story behind the name.
Yeah, the Quiet One. You know, we designed it really almost 10 years ago in conjunction with one of our largest commercial customers. So, you know, working with our customers, it's not really just the sale of a blender. It's the idea behind creating these blending solutions with and in partnership with our customers to fit their needs. And, you know, as I mentioned before, that open air atmosphere, you know, designing something that has got, you know, rubber grommets on the motor to sort of suspend that motor to keep it nice and quiet, and that sound enclosure really at the time and still to this day lends itself to its name as being the Quiet One. Whereas, you know, you've got other you know, other pieces of equipment out there that are loud and noisy. We wanted to be the best and really still consider ourselves the best in the industry in this technology.
We'll be back with more of our interview with Vitamix after this interview with Matt Harding of Piata.
So yeah, just to begin, could you summarize Piata's 2021 for me?
So yeah, sure. I'd love to. I think Piata had an amazing 21, and it was really a lot of the groundwork was laid in 17 and 18 for it. I think we took a long, hard look at our concept, and we looked at the ride that the guest was taking. So the first 35 feet of the journey. From the front door to where our stone person is and they get greeted. And the other thing we did simultaneously, and we didn't think it was going to be really the game changer that it was, but we knew we had to get into digital, right? It was still kind of in it. People were using it. Starbucks was using it. It was driving frequency and it was driving loyalty. But we had spent a lot of time building out that infrastructure. So eventually when 2020 hit, we were ready. We were there. I think 2021 though, for us, was really about executing the brand promise. I think through all the challenges that the team had, they did an absolutely amazing job. So throughout the year, you know, Chris, the CEO, the founder, you know, he put aside monies to pay directly to the hourly staff and the management team that were just above and beyond anything that they had earned from a financial standpoint. And it was twofold. First of all, it was a sense of the company was doing well, that they could afford to do those things. And the other thing was, it was just in true appreciation. I think that one of the things that Piata, you know, we are a company that's built on people who understand hospitality. Every one of us who are in positions to help affect change in the company have come from a true hospitality background. And, you know, it, regardless of whether the guest spends $10 or $100, they want to be transported to a place where people are nice to them, where we can take away some of their cares, help them transition even 5 minutes or 10 minutes just to have a respite. So, you know, I think from a team standpoint, you know, we followed the curve. You know, we saw our wages go up significantly in 2021. And you know what? We weren't going to be that brand that was going to be, hey, we're not going to pay it. Because our team members, if we expect better team members, we have to have a better team. And that means we need to be ahead of the curve. You know, we rolled out things like daily pay for us in 2021. So if you let daily pay, you know, kind of, you can download the app and you actually can get paid after each specific day. It also helps with things like budgeting and putting, you know, your check to go into separate accounts, like if you want to save some money every week. So we rolled that out. We also enhanced a lot of our HR policies and procedures. Obviously, we're adding vacation days as you know, they become national holidays. But things like, you know, just parental leave for the spouse, not the person who's having it. So we enhanced all of those things. And it wasn't necessarily, Joanna, to keep track of or to keep in sync with what was happening in the industry, but it was things that we wanted to do to attract the best people, right? And keep people. But how do we be the best company? It's always a straddle between how you can bring people in and how you can satisfy the needs of the business. Because for us, you know, we're a growing company. And a lot of our growth is fueled off of what comes out of the restaurants. So, you know, this calendar year, we're going to build 10. So we're in the middle of building 10 restaurants this year, right? So in 2021, we also got the team together and we said, hey guys, ladies and gentlemen, and y'alls, because we're in Texas too, so you have to say y'alls, we're going to grow this brand and it deserves its spotlight. The fact that the teams did so amazing during the last couple of years and have actually grown their businesses exponentially, you know, gives us faith that we can grow the brand larger and give more opportunity to people. You know, we are constantly looking to take our teams and to elevate them. So, you know, if you look inside, you know, a lot of the organization, the people who are in positions now have elevated from previous positions, and that's what we want to offer. So the team that's working incredibly hard, you have to offer them just more than just pay. It has to be opportunity. Now you've got tons of people who are all on that spectrum. Like some people want to grow their careers, some people want quality of life, some people want to work part-time for us while they're going to school. And I think what we've been able to do effectively is to offer all of those things. So we're in the middle of building 10 this year, 8 to 10, it all depends. We're, you know, we're not immune to, setbacks with construction and construction materials. And then next year we're looking between 12 and 15. So one of the things that I think that came out strongest from the last couple of years, and I'll use the last couple of years as a term versus the other terms that you could use. But it really strengthened the company and really gave us the gumption to forge ahead. You know, we're going into a brand new market. As you can see, I'm dressed kind of casually here. We're working out of a shared kitchen today, and we're doing a couple of influencer events. We're opening in Charlotte this year. And we're putting a lot of tremendous effort over the next, 12 and 24 months into Texas. We're going back into Ohio. So, we're going to open one market with the North the Carolina market, maybe inching into South Carolina, a teeny bit, a couple of miles. But for us, the story is our teams have afforded us growth. And, it's about giving opportunity to the people who've stuck it out and who've made the brand what it is today.
Absolutely. I think it's great that you mentioned the first right out of the gate that you mentioned your team members, because I think that staffing and labor has obviously been such a point of friction for restaurants this past year. It's been the issue that so many operators have spoken about. So could you go into more detail about how the investment in your staff, whether that's through raises or through benefits and paid parental leave, et cetera, how that's tied to your success and growth?
Sure. Obviously, an organization doesn't want to lose a couple of things. It doesn't want to lose the sales game, but it doesn't want to lose cultural capital. And one of the things that we realized is, if you've got somebody who's working tremendously hard over the last couple of years through the pandemic and has really toughed it out and made the brand stronger, it's time to reward them with opportunity. Now, what people, whether they choose it or not, whether they're successful or not, we want them to be successful. Ultimately, it's up to us and them. But to give them an opportunity to grow their careers and to take their situation to places where they didn't think it was possible, I think that one of the biggest things that we've gotten out of this is that people, although it's been very taxing, and sometimes with the shortage that everyone experienced, people had to sacrifice, but they've been really helpful, and at times they've been vocal and raised their hands and said, "Hey, I can't." And then that's when our job is to help them, to help with moving people around and making sure they have their PTO and getting them the quality of life that they need to. It's been, we had at one point we cleared out the whole office and everybody was working in the field. And we have 9 restaurants in Columbus, and we'll continue to do that. If the restaurant is short, everybody puts down their pencil and hits the road, because it can't, and that can't be always the answer. But I think that right now it's about filling a need, and there's a lot of nonsensical time that's happening right now. So we're trying to do the best we can with what we have. Mm-hmm.
And so besides investment in your team's obviously is crucial, what has allowed such robust physical growth? Like you said, 20 more this year and even more the following year. And we noted that Piatta grew quite substantially as well in 2021.
Yeah. So, what's done it is just the desire to grow. I think we all strongly believe in the brand. We are the leader in the Italian fast casual segment. And it's interesting as we've put our toe into the water in other markets and going back and filling our current markets, what we're getting from our guests every day that we didn't get a year ago is, "Hey, can you come to South Bend? Hey, can you come to, can you come to Katy, Texas? Hey, can you come to, Raleigh?" And those make us feel good. Because a lot of times, when you're dealing with a guest feedback, it's, "Hey, we may have forgotten their straw or their silverware, or we forgot to put tomatoes on their pasta." So to hear those things lightens the heart. And it's really just a focus of getting the brand to a size where we can create more opportunity for more of the people. And that's the fun part, actually. I've been working in the industry for a long time. And the place where I like to be is in young growing brands, because it offers a lot of opportunity for people. and it really can create careers. So, you know, the people on my team, you know, we've got people who I've worked with five and six years already. I've been a Piata 7. And, you know, the opportunity is how do you create more for them? And that's by expanding the footprint of the company, making it more vigorous. And I think that through, you know, and you said, what is fueling it? It's really just a desire to see Piata reach its full potential.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are speaking about like kind of the impact the pandemic had on brands. Since we're kind of in the post-pandemic era, pretty much at this point, at this point, a lot of people are still getting in and getting COVID, of course. So how did, what are the biggest changes or investments that you made between that challenging year of 2020 and 2021?
So obviously, you know, everybody began to take health and hygiene more seriously. I think that they're always, the best companies were always serious about it, but I think you saw a ton of overt sanitation, right? You couldn't go 50 feet in public without seeing a sanitizer station. I think that as guests have come back, you know, we're trying our darndest to keep those, to keep the restaurant as clean as possible. So, you know, I think that's what's changed. The guests' idea of what clean and sanitary was is completely different than what it was a couple of years ago, right? And then the other thing is, you know, I do believe that there's been a lot more compassion in the food service industry to what's going on. I think, you know, you always hear about the outliers, you know, the people who go in and demand that they're not getting service right away. And I can go to restaurants and immediately see how the restaurant is doing. You know, it's like if you go in and you see this team running around and I just have compassion for them. So I think that people have been nicer in restaurants. I think they're more understanding than they ever were, because they know it's been televised, that they understand it's been in the news, that people are hurting for labor, that they're absolutely doing the best they can. And you know, if you have the face page, you know that you see all those posts, hey, we're doing the best we can, please be patient. And I think actually social media and Facebook especially, I call it face page, but Facebook especially has been really good at getting the message out about the plight of restaurants. And I think the awareness in the public, you know, so they're rooting for us too. And, but at some point I hope, and I know we will get back to it, but I'm looking forward to the day where we can kind of normalize and service can be service. And the chaos of people not showing up every day is kind of something in the rearview mirror. But it's something that's plaguing the industry. And frankly, you know, a lot of the industry has to change. You know, it's not march or die anymore. And I think people are signing off on that kind of lifestyle. You know, you had, when restaurants closed in the beginning of 2020, you had a slew of people who just left the industry forever. And it was in hindsight that they said, well, why did I do that? Why was I living that lifestyle? Yeah, I may have made a little bit more money, but I was disrespected, you know, and you see all of those stories. So I think the restaurant industry is doing a great job of changing with the times. But, you know, we're also going to have to put our face on and talk about the positives of the food service industry if we ever want to get a lot of people coming back to it in the workforce. And I think that we can do that. It's a dynamic industry. I tell you what, it's afforded me travel. And I've worked in, you know, big cities and it's been an amazing life for me. And I hope that other people see the opportunities in it for them.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the most crucial investment that, whether tech or operationally, that that Piata made in 2021?
Mm-hmm. It started, well, it was in 19 and 20, and it was tech for us. Right at the beginning, and it was in April, we actually hired a second person in technology, the technology department, and he basically wrote the Android code for our app. And then at the end, he ended up finishing up the iOS code. We had a white, just kind of a purchased app, and we didn't have a ton of functionality in it. And so we wrote our own app, and that really, I think, helped our guests. You know, we have the ability, even at less than 50 restaurants, we can store value. You know, I could buy you a $50 gift card. I could buy a $50 gift card for myself, and I can send it to you. You know, if you're out nearby, you're coming to Columbus, and I can just send that. And so we punch over our weight with those sort of things. I think technology is, you know, nothing can replace the people element in getting the order right, getting it there, giving a smile. But the technology piece is really critically important. But you can't forgo one without the other. And so I think that's one of the things that we made a critical investment in. And it was also in our people. So we said, we've got opportunities with technology, with getting KDS in our second make lines in our stores. And, you know, we're doing that. We've done that. And the other thing is we made investments in our people. You know, we brought on a world-class training and development person from a really big, really successful company. And they were building out their infrastructure. You know what? So again, all the pieces are getting in place, but I think it's really about, you know, the next couple of years for us and laying that groundwork in place now.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, you know, once we realized that the world wasn't ending, because it really was a health epidemic, it wasn't a financial epidemic. We started playing like you know, we weren't affected, and you know, obviously you have to make, you know, amends. We looked at hours, and some places are, you know, we're in areas that they were closed, and we obviously wanted to take care of our team. And if anybody, you know, we had symptom surveys on our POS, so when you clocked in and you had temperature checks and the whole thing, because, you know, you have to keep people safe and you don't want to spread something like that. But it's really about building our human capital, our human teams, and increasing the digital. So the second piece for us right now with technology is the analytics. And, you know, I was just having a great conversation this morning with Jason Proffitt, our head of technology. And, you know, the information that we're able to pull now is pretty amazing. Now, you have to put it in action. And we're pretty excited about that part. But we now have the ability to slice and dice our guest base. And not, you know, so I can tell if they're left-handed or right-handed, but you know, we know that guests who order pasta are more likely to order piatta stick. And we know that when they order a specific pasta, they're more likely to come back more often. And so that's the piece that will help engineer and drive trial, retrial, and improve, frankly, improve something if we don't see it. Mm-hmm. And the guests are telling us, we just have to look and find it.
Yeah, absolutely. And how are you putting those analytics in action or thinking about it?
Yeah. So again, it starts with a conversation, and then we're getting the larger group, you know, the executive team in the conversations, and just really having sit downs. And then we'll break each one of those things down. So in terms of, like, you know, if it's a create your own pasta or if it's a menu item pasta, how frequently are they coming in or coming back? You know, what's the frequency when we get that guest, a new guest, when we get them in so many times in the first 90 days? Then after that, if they've come in a certain amount of times in the first 90 days, then they're loyal guests, you know, and certainly we want to take care of them and provide them a great experience. But we're more interested in the bucket that aren't those people, right? So how do we get everybody in that experience? So again, it's about looking at the numbers. It's about having discipline in terms of that. It's about talking at the highest levels of the organization. And I really feel like we've got plenty of experience to in the organization, in the company, once we have those conversations, we can resolve the issues. There isn't a single issue that we've come up against. And, you know, to a varying degree, right, we've always been successful, but there isn't, when we put our minds to something as an organization, we always have a breakthrough in it. Mm-hmm. So again, it's the conversations, it's the dialogue, it's having the data on hand, and it's having people who can take that conversation, bring the data back in a more refined set than we can make into an actionable. But it really is interdisciplinary between all the departments, right? And then it flows up to marketing, flows up to culinary, flows up to operations. But everybody kind of has a seat at the table in terms of that, so that they can make sure that their piece is operating at capacity.
Great. Well, on that positive note, I think that's all the questions I have then. Thank you so much, Matt, for speaking with me today. As always, great interview and great insight.
And now back to our segment with Vitamix.
So we've spoken a lot about the blender itself, but it seems like there are some other factors that are important to consider in terms of beverage consistency. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, you know, when we go to work with a partner, obviously we keep the blender in mind, but we also keep operational efficiency in mind. So, what you want is you want a consistent product. You know, we all go to those places that we know and that we love because we're going to be able to get a consistent product, and that equals return customers. So for us, it's taking a look at the operational efficiency of a customer and the setup. Where's the blender set up in the operation? And is it in the optimal space to where I can use my scoops and spoons to being able to load the ingredients? And is it sitting right next to the freezer where I'm pulling the frozen product and then hitting the button? Or am I running back and forth down the restaurant line to be able to put this together? So, we talk about blending equipment a lot, but we also talk about the operational efficiency and how we can make that a more efficient fit for the customer, thus getting more people through the line and creating that efficiency within that environment.
For those who might not know, you know, I mentioned beverage consistency. For those who might not know, can you kind of elaborate on what that is and explain what beverage consistency is to our listeners?
Yeah. So, like I was saying before, we've all got that spot that we go to, and we all, know and love our certain orders and that consistent product. And, Vitamix is a blending manufacturing company that creates a consistent product. But we also like to see that end product come to life through our partners. And when we can get a consistent product, that means that, my coffee is going to have the same whipped topping every time. My blended beverage is going to be served at the same sort of temperature. So it's not too watery. It's not too processed. It's got flavor and it's balanced, depending on who may be working that shift. You want to make sure that it's consistent throughout so that I can get through that drive-through line, or I can come up and put my order in and end leaving the establishment with the same sandwich or the same coffee drink or the same smoothie that I had yesterday, creating that consistent product.
Are some of the challenges that restaurants can face when it comes to beverage consistency, are they unique to certain segments or certain types of operations?
Yeah, I think that we've seen, as you alluded to before, the labor shortage and the issues within the industry, but consistency hits on all sort of facets of the industry, especially when there's limited labor or the type of labor situation that we're going through. There's a turnover with that limited staff. The increased summertime obviously brings on more of a demand for quick service type of beverage. So training and that summer staff becomes really crucial to being able to to provide that consistent product. And we like to think that we do that with the Quiet One and make that even easier with, you know, the one button that you've got to press in order to be able to create that smoothie or that coffee drink or that blended beverage.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for sharing all this knowledge with us. If there was one thought or action item you wanted our audience to walk away from this conversation with today, what would it be?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, obviously, you know, Vitamix is here. We're a blending authority. You know, we are the blending authority. And, you know, we pair well with the partnerships and the brands out there among a lot of the food service chains. I think look at it as, you know, when you're taking a look at pieces of equipment in the industry and who you're going to partner, who you're going to bring in, take a look at the overall value and what you're getting. Are they selling you a piece of equipment, or are they wanting to be partners with you to help you create the best solutions for your operation? Because it all comes down to really that total cost and what it costs to own those pieces of equipment. And, you know, it's something that you look at from a operational standpoint, but obviously a budgetary standpoint. And for us, you know, making sure that we've got the best pieces of equipment where they need to be are first and foremost.
And how should our audience go about finding out more about beverage consistency and the Vitamix commercial?
Yeah, definitely. We've got a wide range of areas that you can go see. Obviously, Vitamix.com has got all of our commercial information on it. We've got video links on YouTube that can take you through pretty much anything that you want to blend, both front of house and back of house. So we are for both types of solutions, front of house and back of house. You know, anything from small prep blenders all the way up to our gallon and a half XL blender. So I would say the best area is Vitamix.com and our YouTube channels online to see if you maybe already do own a Vitamix blender, what you can do to really unlock its full potential.